This is Mod Love, the show that tackles dating, mating, and relating in the modern world with your host, premier dating mentor and coach, Jody Riley, and her partner from Straight Talk with Steve, Stephen Cardinal. Also featuring Ann Wade, our soulmate expert from soulmatedance.com.
Welcome, everyone. This is Jody Riley with my co-host,
Stephen Cardinal.
And you are listening to
Mod Love.
Thanks so much for joining us tonight. We have a fun little show that's kicking off our July summer here. What are we going to call it?
That's a good question. We didn't really sit down and discuss what we're going to call it, but this is going to be our steamy summer of sex here on Mod Love. So for July, our show topics are going to be all sex-oriented, specifically.
Yeah, sex and intimacy. We're gonna delve into it. We're going
to
have
Oh, we have to do sex and intimacy?
Yes.
I thought this was just going to be cheap, tawdry sex
were talking about. No, it's not Tawdry Tuesday. It's we're doing sex.
It's Tawdry Thursday.
We're doing sex and intimacy because those two things are very closely related. At least I believe they're closely related. So we're going to do that. We're going to spend all of July. We're going to have some great guests coming on with us to help us out. Tonight, we're not going to actually have a guest. Tonight, we're just going to talk, you and I, about an interesting article that I found. It was on Chatelaine.com, I do believe.
Yes.
And it was on an interesting topic that we have not discussed on the show before, but I think it's a topic that definitely applies to a lot of women. I don't know how many men this would necessarily apply to, but it's the idea of forcing yourself to have sex with someone when you're really not feeling like it and kind of forcing that physical affection. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. I thought it was a really good article, and they talk a little bit about also boosting your sexual appetite so that you're not having to feel like you're guilting yourself into it or forcing yourself to do it. So I thought it was an interesting topic, so we're going to delve into that tonight.
Agreed.
We also have an interesting article because we are celebrating the fact that the Supreme Court has said that gay marriage is legal everywhere.
Right, everywhere.
And when I first,
all 50 states.
Yeah, and when I first read this article we're going to talk about in our first segment here tonight, I at first was like, I don't agree with this guy. But then when I read his reasoning, and it's about whether or not the Supreme Court was actually the body that needed to deal with this issue, because you and I hold a firm belief that the government should not be telling anybody who to get married,
right,
whether it's legislatively or in the courts or wherever. Marriage and that should be outside of the government's purview. You shouldn't have to go get a license to get married. You should be able to marry who the heck you want to marry.
Right. I think there's a difference between doing it for religious purposes, you know, that holy matrimony thing, and that's one thing. But we have legally added like 150 different legal concepts that are tied to the idea of marriage, and withholding those from some citizens and only applying them to others doesn't quite make sense. So the fact that government has gotten itself so embedded into it, I think it did need obviously to get resolved. But we'll go into that article as well, because he does talk a little bit about why the Supreme Court was, in his mind, the right place for that to occur.
Right. So he changed my mind. I read it and he changed my mind. We also have a listener question tonight about somebody who's wanting to dip her toe back into the pool of dating. And speaking of pools, in our third segment tonight, we're going to talk about peeing in your pool in relation to dating and what that means. And we're actually basing that on an article that you wrote, a Straight Talk article that you wrote a while back about peeing in your pool. And what are we, speaking of Straight Talk, going to talk about in our Straight Talk tonight?
I am going to be talking about measurements.
Measurements.
Yes. Measurements.
Measurements of what?
You're going to have to wait to find out.
Oh, well, see, that's not fair.
Of course it's fair.
No, it's not.
It's that little teaser thing. People who don't measure things hate this man. Learn the one trick that just makes them angry. Yeah, that's good. That's
BuzzFeed.
The way, this is BuzzFeed.
Exactly. So you're basically being BuzzFeed
This is
right
my
now.
BuzzFeed moment.
All right. Well, with that said, let's go ahead and pull up that same sex needed to be decided by the Supreme Court article. And this guy, he actually wrote it in Psychology Today.
Right. And why is Psychology Today addressing things of law like this?
I think they go into all purview of things
I
in
do.
Psychology
I
Today. Yeah. And I actually really like the Psychology Today stuff because it's written by professionals. It's not just written by somebody who just maybe has an opinion. It's written by people that are actually doing work in the field.
Actually, that's where I found that article today about becoming addicted to potato chips that
somebody
I was sharing around
opinion.
Today.
Yes.
I have a potato chip issue. But that's neither here nor there. But
it's not
yes,
a fetish. It's just an issue.
It's an issue. It's the food itself. It's the food itself making itself addictive.
Should we do an entire show on your food addiction?
Probably not on model. I love potato chips. So maybe that is a topic after steamy, sultry summer of sex here at Mod Love. maybe we'll addictive August or something.
Yeah, there you go. I like that. But anyway, so this Mark D. White actually wrote an article saying that he believed the Supreme Court was actually really the best body to decide this because he said the legislature didn't need to do it because this is not something that needs to be legislated because technically within the law should apply to everybody regardless.
Right. This is the legislature is there for policy. So when various factions have competing needs and desires, the legislature is supposed to be there to kind of negotiate a place where everyone can work, and denying a right to some people. So you have a law that works for some people and ignores others. That's less of a policy issue and more of a principle. We have this principle of equality. And so that's where the court is designed to step in for matters of principle versus policy.
Well, and so it kind of, he doesn't really in this particularly go into whether or not marriage should have ever been a government issue or not. But he was just basically saying that when it comes to an issue like this about rights and interpreting these laws, that in a lot of cases, especially when you have 50 different states that have different laws, determining where these laws are, you know, actually apply equally across the board. He said the Supreme Court was the perfect place to put it. And after I read his article, I actually kind of had to agree with him because once he talked about, you know, the difference, because I'm so mired in get them all out. Just get them all out of your bedroom. Nobody needs to be in your bedroom. Nobody needs to be in your marriage. But they're already there.
Right. We've already tied to it. We've been tying more and more stuff to it over the years between healthcare rights and, you know, who do you have the right. So when your partner is injured in the hospital or sick and in the hospital, who has the rights to go in and make decisions? If the government has declared you to be a spouse, boom, suddenly you have that right. And it's written into so many laws. You know, actually, I was on a friend, my cousin's Facebook page, and she is pro-gay marriage and all that. But a friend of hers who is apparently against it had chimed in. She said, I have no problem with rights. I wish they would just pick a different word for it. She doesn't like the idea of the word marriage being used to define this particular new
instance. But marriage is not a religious word.
But it's just, this is the word we've used for so many years, even though marriage existed long before Christianity did. It's always been used to, you know, combine tribes and combine families and whatnot. It's existed long before Christianity. However, do we really want the government stepping in to basically decide what the definitions in a dictionary are going to be? But the bigger issue, though, is to me, as far as the defining a different word, you know, just don't use the word marriage. Come up with some new word like civil unions, except the law is written in so many towns and states and cities and everywhere else using the word marriage. You would have to have you would force every single legislative body in the entire country, plus externally, because a lot of countries just recognize other countries' marriage. So if you're overseas somewhere, whatever their laws are, if you're married to that person who ends up in the hospital, they're automatically going to grant you that spousal right because it's much more universal than just our laws. And you can't use a different term without forcing everybody to rewrite every single law. So it's, you know, wicked. I mean, from New Englanders, the term wicked and the term cool, wicked cool, those used to mean a whole lot. We know what they mean now. If I say that is cool, I'm probably not saying that its temperature is lower than normal. And if I say it's wicked, I'm probably not calling it evil. I'm calling it awesome. Words change.
Yes.
And we do
yes.
it without a government telling us what they are. And that's where that is. But I like where this guy went as far as saying, it's not for the legislature to grant marriage rights to gays and lesbians when they decide to or when it supports the re-election. Those rights are theirs by virtue of being citizens of this country.
Yes, yes.
On the other hand, when the Supreme Court decided in favor of same-sex marriage, they did not endow gays and lesbians with a newly created right. They just gave legal endorsement to a right that they already had all along. It just was not officially recognized.
Right. Right. And it eventually was being recognized rather slowly state to state to state to state. And, you know, and of course, this is going to bring up all other issues of, you know, there's going to be churches that are going to say, we're not going to marry gay and lesbians.
Which isn't fine because the government has no control over what a church does.
Right. You know, unless somebody decides to go in and sue a church because they want to get married in that venue.
Which I would hope that that would fail because, again, you don't have that right. See, the sticky place where I see it coming up is, so take, for instance, that case of the cake maker last year, I think it was, who once he found out that his potential customers were gay, he said he refused to do it. And so there was a lawsuit, and the government said, no, you have to make them that cake. I don't agree with that. I know that it is bigoted and prejudicial and all that, but I don't think the government has the right to step into a private business and tell them who they're going to do business with.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that.
Right. I realize we want to get there, but I don't think the government is the right tool to make that happen. I think we as a society have to do it ourselves by saying we're not going to do business with you until you recognize the rights of everybody, but turning to the government and say, hey, force them to do it. I just don't think that's the right way to go about it. For me, it's that idea of the ends justifies the means, and I don't subscribe to that ethical idea.
And I'll give you a great example of that. When I was growing up, my grandmother worked for a man. And she ran his store. She ran his business for him. And he would not allow the black people in the community. You got to understand, this is back in the late 30s, early 40s. So it's a long time ago. Back when, you know, I think the Jim Crow laws were probably still in place back then.
I don't
then.
Know if they even existed back then, did they?
I don't know.
I think they came about. Like, I'm not that much of a
basically,
historian.
Put it this way, everybody was really, really racist.
Right.
And this guy basically said, we're not going to give store credit to anyone who is black. He would only give store credit to people who was white. And my grandmother just thought, this is silly. These people work just like everybody else does. She really didn't like this guy. He got on her nerves. And so she's like, you know what? I'm going to open my own store. So she buys the plot of land across the street from him, builds her own store, and says, you know what? If you're black, come here. You get store credit just like everybody else. She put him out of business.
Right.
That's the way it works.
Right. And I understand that, you know, sometimes we don't want to necessarily wait because the people who are stuck in that waiting mode, for instance, you know, take 10 years ago, all those gay people who wanted to get married and couldn't do it because the law hadn't caught up. You know, society is just such a longer term thing that, yes, it sucks that those people weren't allowed to have what they should have had 10 years ago. But a lot of fighting has been done at the lower level to start getting more and more people to buy into it and say that, yes, this is a right. And I think that's the healthier way for society to grow. It is slower. And obviously, I understand I sit in a very privileged position. I am a middle-aged white male with good economic outlook, so that, you know, maybe I'm speaking from a not that place of having been put down, and so maybe I can't understand what it's like to say no. The time is now, and not to wait. But I do think there's a place for the rule of law and for society to kind of have the discussions before we start just calling in the government to say, hey, make this happen for us. So it's a tough one. I can definitely see the other side of it, but I do think in the long run, society, I think, is better off. Again, society is better off, not the individuals, but society is better off. Having those conversations and making it happen
organically
rather than through the force, because, you know, forcing people to accept these things, forcing the flag to be taken down, is going to get a lot more kickback than gradually convincing them that this is the right way.
There you go.
But well, who knows? Revolutions are sometimes necessary, though. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm just a voice on the radio.
But you're a very good voice on the radio.
Thank you.
So let's pull up that listener question here we got. An interesting listener question. Can you read it for
us? Sure can. So the listener question tonight is, I've been married for a long time and recently my divorce resolved. I'm ready to date again, but I haven't dated since college. I don't know where to start. I'm in my 40s and all of my friends are married and they aren't any help with my questions because they haven't dated since college either. So should I go online and give that a try or just try to meet someone in my daily life? I don't know where to start.
This, I think, would be probably an issue that faces a lot of people when they wind up finding themselves divorced in their 40s. It wasn't something they were looking forward to. And I don't know about you, but when I was in my 30s when I ended the relationship. I had been married, and then I had a long-term relationship after that. And when I found myself back in the dating pool, I didn't know what to do either. I mean, I didn't know how to date. I didn't know how to put myself out there. Online dating was just becoming a thing back in 2004. It had been out for a while, but there was still a huge stigma to it. But, you know, the first place to start, I think, at least what I would say, is sit down and figure out, what is it that I'm looking for? You know, it might not be what you had. What a lot of people do is they knee jerk and they say, I wanted the exact opposite of what I was married to. Well, that might not be right. What you might really want is something a little different, or maybe you want exactly the same type of person, but not that person themselves. So I would say one of the first things you should do is sit down and figure out exactly what do you want in another person. And then you need to figure out, do you just want to date? Do you want to have a relationship? What is it that you're looking for from the process? You know, do you want to meet somebody to eventually get married again? You kind of need to know all of this stuff. You also need to think about kids, whether you have kids or whether you want to date someone with kids or whether you are okay dating someone with kids. I mean, because once we get in our 40s, that tends to be something that also, you know, has kind of
come. It's a reality. Yeah, it's a reality. A lot more people are going to have kids.
Right. But dating is not the same as it was in college. And there's a couple of reasons why. Number one, technology has really progressed. And number two, college kids date very differently than 40-year-olds do.
Right. Even today, you can say those college kids, when they're 40, they're not going to know how to date either, because what they're learning about how to date now is completely different. Because, you know, you're in college, you're surrounded by people your own age who are, you know, their little paper says that they have to be in the same room with you for the next hour and 20 minutes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. That doesn't exist when you're out of college, except for the people who work with you. And, you know, we do always have the idea, should you date at work? And, you know,
we have some videos up on the Mod Love website
of people dating at work
that talk about that issue, okay. Sweetie Pie.
I was going to say, I thought I pulled the plugs on all those cameras, but whew.
But one thing that this listener in here mentions, and one thing that you talk about is that all your friends are married and they're not really very helpful with your questions. You know, I know this is going to sound like a scary thing, but you're going to probably need to make more friends, not because your married friends are no longer your friends, but you're going to have a lot less in common with them now.
Right.
And you're going to need to have a support system of people that understand what you're going through, understand the dating process and whatever. And they're not really going to be able to help you with that because, like you said, they haven't dated since college either. But it's nice to have a group of single people around you that can not necessarily commiserate, but at least understand where you're coming from. So the first thing I would say is, you know, again, meetup.com. We talk about it all the time on the show. Find some things that you're interested in doing, whether it's book clubs or hiking or biking or, you know, kayaking. I'm not really sure where this listener is from. But find some things that you can do in your area that interest you and get into a meetup or a group of people that are doing that. Number one, that's going to get you some new friends. Number two, that's going to possibly put you in the path of somebody that you can date. Because you don't have to go online dating if you don't want to. But if you're going to go online, you want to make sure that you're clear about what you want and what you want out of the process. Otherwise, if you just want to date, but you're pretending you want a relationship, you're going to lead people on, and you don't want to do that. And if you do want a relationship, but you're just, oh, no, I just want to have fun, then, again, you're misleading people in that way, too. So know exactly what you're looking for when you get out of the process. And something I want to mention, too, is that if you're thinking about stepping out and going online, on our Mod Love Facebook page, we actually just put up a form out there where you can sign up and get a free video series that I created teaching you exactly how to set up an online dating profile so that you'll get the kind of results that you're looking for. And it walks you through the process and also talks a little bit about the psychology behind how people search those dating sites. So, you know, if you're inclined to do that, go out there, get those videos. They're short videos, they're not that long. There's even screenshots of exactly how to do it. You know, I mean, there's no mystery to it at all. Use those videos and create an online dating profile that really is going to work for you. But I got to say, if you're going to do online dating, that's fine. Just get out there and do it. Put something out there. Do it. But do join meetup.com. Do look for volunteer opportunities and things like that to get yourself out there so that you're not just sitting behind your computer. you need to make some more friends.
Right. Dating happens outside the house.
Yes, a lot.
Yeah.
A whole lot.
For me, after I got divorced, I've never done online dating. I've just met people through, again, doing the meetup.com stuff, making friends of friends on Facebook, which kind of, I guess, online dating, but that's much more of a social, start interacting, then you meet up in person and get to know one another that way. But I've never done the technically online dating stuff. I've never set up a profile or any of that. So there's all
you
sorts of different
like
ways
George
to
Clooney.
Do it.
You look like George Clooney. You don't have to.
I'm just saying there's all sorts of different ways to do it. And, you know, if you're not comfortable doing the online of looking at pictures, then going out is fine too. There's no one right way. It's whatever right the way is right for you. And if you like being online, then give it a try. If you really don't, if you're, you know, lots of people really don't use computers all that much. Think of a plumber, think of a carpenter. They're not sitting in front of a desk with a computer all day. They're hardly ever in front of their computer. So it's not part of their day-to-day lives. So you may be intimidated by the computer, just don't really care for it, right? So if that's the case, online dating may not be the right one for you. So going out and actually seeing people and talking to people may be the better choice.
There you go.
But yeah, or, you know, you can always go back and start taking some classes.
And you'll
meet people that way too.
That's
so it's kind of like going back to school again.
Yeah, you could look at your local community college. I bet they've got some classes out that you can take. Look up, again, there's meetup groups out there that do cooking classes and wine tasting classes. Look into
learn
stuff
Italian.
Like that.
Learn Italian. Yeah. I mean, all sorts of fun stuff you can learn, painting and everything.
Tons of fun stuff to do. But again, make some new friends and put yourself out there in new different ways. And with that, I think we're going to have to mosey on into straight talk. Talk about some measurements.
Talking about measurements.
Got all kinds of thoughts of like measuring tools in my head here.
There's something going round that doesn't let me feel at ease. It's creeping like the plague. It's going to bring me down to my knees.
Every now and then we find ourselves in a rut, and it could be like the previous the listener question there, talking about someone who had just gotten divorced and now is suddenly facing that I need to make a lot of changes in my life, or you know, maybe you've been kind of concentrating on just the family and the career and you've let your health go, or somehow or another you're recognizing that you're at that point where I'm kind of stuck in a rut right now. What can I do? And I've always said that one of the best things to do is do something for yourself. Go teach yourself something. Learn to play guitar. Go learn Italian. Go learn to kayak. But find something and go do something to get better at it. And that's all very well and good. And like for the listener question, we said, you know, go out there and start dating. But it's very important to me, I think, that you need to measure yourself. So for instance, I've been going back to the gym for the past few years now because I kind of let my health kind of go, you know, trickle off. I sit at a desk. I get soft. And it's important to start tracking your progress. So you need to find a way of measuring what you're doing so that you can see that you're growing. So whether if you're learning, let's say you're taking a class on learning Italian, of course, there are probably going to be measurements built in. They're going to start giving you quizzes and tests. And at the end of the semester, you're going to take some kind of a final. So that's a measurement tool built in. But if you're going out on your own, say, to learn how to kayak, you may not know how to, you may not be thinking about measuring yourself, but having some way of checking where was I when I started and starting to recognize that you're growing. Because it can be frustrating if you don't recognize that you're growing. But I'm going to say, all right, so how do you measure something like going out dating after you've been out for 20 years? I want to start dating. I want to start being better at it. How do you measure that? I mean, to me, that's journaling, right? You start writing down your thoughts and you can look at those 6 months later and see how your thought process and what you've been doing has changed. So it's all about measuring. It's about getting out there, making a change in your life when you feel you've been in a rut, and then measuring it so that you can see that you're actually making growth so that you have something to build on. And that is my discussion on measurement. So go out, make a change, measure it, and learn that you're growing and recognize it. And that is Straight Talk with Steve.
It seems my stupid mouth is going to get me into trouble again. My charm has set the trap. He's reaching for the shovel, says he's digging my grave. But the more I try...
That is fantastic. And I totally agree. I'm a big, huge fan of journaling myself. I don't do it so much anymore, but I probably need to get back at it. But I think with business, you're taught, you know, measure, you know, is this ad that you put out doing what you wanted it to do? Is this marketing material doing what you wanted it to do? So we get used to it. But we sometimes don't think to measure ourselves and our own personal growth. So I
right.
think that's
but
a great
I,
idea.
But I mean, if you're going to the gym, because that's where you're trying to personalize, you know, where you're trying to grow, you can just keep track of number of reps and weights that you're trying to do. You can be using a linear progression program where you can actually see from week to week to week, I actually can see myself based on the numbers getting stronger or lasting longer if you're working more on a endurance type program. If you're working on, again, a language, you can see from where you started, I didn't know a single word, and by the end of the semester, I'm actually able to have small conversations. Some things are easier to measure than others, but those ones that are hard to measure, I think you need to work a little bit harder just to find out how am I going to measure this so that down the road I can see that, yes, it did pay off. You know, when I picked up a guitar and I could barely do a chord, you know, 6 months down the road, if I kept playing, kept working on it, and suddenly I can do 12 chords and actually write, you know, play and a full song, that's a great measure. But you have to remember where you were at so that you can say, you can see that progression and kind of give yourself that feedback loop of I'm doing something good for myself and it's working.
Great idea. And with that, we're going to have to take a quick little break. When we come back, we're going to jump into our feature segment talking about having sex to please your partner, you know, kind of forcing yourself into that role. So don't go away. You've been listening to
Mod Love.
Hi, Jody here from Mod Love. I hope you guys are enjoying the show. I just wanted to remind you all to visit our website at modloveradio.com. You'll notice that on our homepage on the right-hand side, there's a blue box. If you put your information in there, we will send you some free goodies. And while you're there, you can also watch videos, listen to episodes, subscribe to the show, or even check out our gallery of expert guests. You can also search for articles and send us your questions. Again, that web address is modloveradio.com. Thanks so much for tuning in, and thanks for listening to Mod Love. Welcome back, everyone. This is Jody Riley and my co-host,
Stephen Cardinal,
of modloveradio.com. You might also be listening to us on kinetichifi.com or banditradio.net. I do believe it's
banditradiofm.net.
Banditradiofm.net. Why do I have trouble remembering that? But anyway, however you got to us, we are extremely happy you're here. And of course, we're into our feature segment now. And tonight we're going to be talking a little bit about sex and intimacy, but tonight we're going to talk about forcing yourself to have sex to please your partner. And I think what struck me about this, number one, is it's not a topic that we've ever covered on the show. So, woohoo! It's something
brand
that we
new.
Haven't talked about. Brand new. But I think as people get older and not even older, I think as their life starts to mesh together and they start to have these different life event changes, that sometimes sex gets put on the back burner. And I know at least sometimes for women, we want to please our partners and we want to have sex and we want to be intimate, but all this other stuff gets in the way and you wind up feeling like, God, I'm just so stinking tired. I don't really want to have sex. But then at the same time, you want to have sex because you know that your partner wants to have sex and needs it. And you want to be intimate, and it's kind of like this downward spiral of guilt, and then you just force yourself to do it, and then you feel bad because you force yourself to do it, and it's like a never-ending cycle. I don't know that men have that so much the way women do. Do they?
I think some do. I don't know. I've never seen any percentages. You know, if this happens to 70% of women, does it happen to 30% of men? I don't know. It certainly does happen to men, but I don't know what the number, how the numbers align as far as the frequency of that happening.
And I would wonder, too, if it's like if you have a woman that has a much higher libido than maybe a normal woman or whatever, that might actually
right.
happen.
Right. I mean, I've definitely seen in, you know, online forums where guys are talking about stuff and, you know, some guys are saying, you know, I'm getting older and my libido is not where it used to be. You know, when I was in my 20s, you know, the wind blew and boom, I was ready. And here you are in your 40s and 50s and it is, you know, a third or fourth or fifth thought after the stuff you've been working on at work or going out to, I don't know, play tennis or whatever it is. There's lots of other things that end up higher on your list. But then there are other guys whose time is like, nope, I'm 55 and I could still do it three times a day if I had the opportunity to.
You think those guys are lying?
That they want to do it that often? Or that they
could do it that
often?
Well,
there's the physical yeah. ability to do it, but the desire to do it. I mean, you'll see guys saying, you know, I'm 50-something, I'll still masturbate two times a day. And other guys are like, man, I crack it off a couple times a week. And it really, really varies for men, certainly. And, you know, based on this article, I think a lot of the same things are there. Part of it is hormones. You know, guys, testosterone tends to dip as they get older, and that's the main driver for their libido. And so, obviously, if you're a man and finding that your libido isn't quite where it used to be and you would like it to be back again, certainly go have your testosterone levels checked out. But, I mean, depending on where you are in your career, I mean, a lot of these successful business guys have very stressful jobs, and that increases, was it cortisol is the stress hormone, which mm-hmm. kills all sorts of other stuff in your body helping to generate those feelings of being sexual and whatnot for a lot of men. So depending on your life structure, that stuff all could be weighing on it too. So no, it can certainly happen to men. I just don't know what the numbers are compared to women.
Well, and it's interesting too, like with women, one of the big things that comes to mind, and I think it's also alluded to here in this article, and by the way, we will put these articles up on the Facebook page so you guys can read them and tell us what you think, because we always like hearing from what people think. But, you know, when you go through life changes like having children, your hormones get completely, totally out of whack. And also, new babies, they cry a lot, they poop a lot, they pee a lot, they need to be fed, they're constantly demanding your attention.
And they give off that smell that supposedly depresses your sexual urges, right? Or is that just a made-up thing that you tell me?
I don't know, because we don't have children. I don't know.
No, but you've mentioned that before, that baby smell is supposedly something that turns off the...
That was not me, baby. That might have been your other girlfriend.
I could swear you're talking about
that. Might have been your
other
girlfriend. No. Babies have that smell that make you want to have a baby, that make you want to have a child. Perhaps you were talking to another woman who had that idea. I don't know about that, but I know that sometimes when people are overstressed by, you know, newborn babies, new jobs, craziness like that, that a lot of times they actually, you know, they're so stressed out they don't feel like being intimate. They don't want to be touched, much less have sex. You know, it's just like, I just want to sleep. I haven't slept in 48 hours because the kid's been screaming. I just want to sleep. And so I think, you know, that for women sometimes definitely takes a toll when you're in your 20s and 30s and whatever age you might be having your children. But other things like job stressors or, again, as you get older, your libido tends to, you know, fall off as you're, you know, going through. Although I've heard, and I don't know this yet, I'm looking forward to finding out, that for women after they go through menopause, their libido actually increases. I'm looking forward to that because, you know, I'm not going to have any children, but I just think that would be fantastic. And I don't know if that's a psychological thing or if that's a hormone thing. It's like, woohoo, can't get pregnant anymore. Let's get it on. Or if it's generally a hormonal, like your hormones or like, hey, let's get it on. I don't know the answer to that, but I have heard that is an issue, that happens.
So in this case, though, this article is talking about, right, if you've reached that point, the question is, should you force yourself to have sex with your partner
right.
for the sake of intimacy? And they make it very clear. We're not talking about being forced to have it. This is you making the decision on your own that even though you're not feeling like being particularly sexual or intimate, do you do it anyway? And they say, you know, for some women, they don't necessarily want to, but as soon as they start getting warmed up, then all of a sudden they're so glad that they did. And they really, so it's kind of overcoming your own barriers to getting started in the first place, I guess.
Yeah, and it's because once you get that rush of hormones, then you're just like, oh, I'm so glad I did this because now I feel so much closer to my partner and whatever. But if you're one of these people that you're finding yourself doing this a lot, you can actually do things to boost your sexual appetite. And one of the big things, and it doesn't really talk about it in here so much because it's not really geared necessarily, I don't think, towards people who have children. But if you have kids, I don't care if they're teenagers or middle schoolers or toddlers or babies, at some point you need to have couple time alone. So make sure that you have some couple time alone, you know, where the kids have gone to bed or whatever, and do something with your partner that you did before you had babies. You know, I think that's really important. So that's something that you can do to boost your appetite for sex, just being alone with your partner and being intimate. And sometimes it's not even about having sex. Sometimes it's just about being really close. But it also talks about incorporating things that you like in your regular life into sex. And they use the analogy of chocolate. If you really like chocolate, include a little chocolate in your sex. And
right. You know, make it part of your ritual, yeah, to have a little piece of chocolate beforehand. So, you know, dig into the cupboard and pull out the really nice dark chocolate if that's what you're into, and kind of share it with each other a little bit. And then, you know, that's kind of the symbol of let's go get it on.
Now something, and I don't even know if you are aware of this. You're probably not aware of this because I've never really told you. But one of the things that in Tantra they talk about is ritual bathing. And so for me, we have sex a lot of times like after one of us has had a shower.
Right.
Because for me, having a shower bathing is a trigger. Because I've read about the Tantra, and so to me, that's a trigger. So find things like that are triggers for you.
Right.
You know, whether it's a scent, they talk about scent. Scent is can be a huge trigger. If there's a particular lotion that you like, or an oil, or a perfume. Now, you're not really big on scents.
No.
I like scents.
I'm not a big smell person.
I like scents. I like earthy scents. So candles could be really good for that if you're a scent kind of person. Music, getting in the mood. But they also talk about things like meditation, yoga. Anything that you can do to reduce stress in your life is going to boost your sexual appetite because you feel freer to do it.
Right. And actually for me, especially when I was a little bit younger, but even still today, one thing that works great for me is going to the beach. Because A, you go to the beach and you relax. So talking about the de-stressors, that's
looking at the girls in bikinis.
But that's the other thing. So now you're at the beach and you're surrounded by all these people who are barely clothed. And so between the relaxing and all that, I mean, by the time you get home, you're like, yeah, I'm feeling pretty jiggy. So yes, that's one of those things for me that works.
And then after I take a shower and get all the sand off of me, then I'm feeling all jiggy.
Exactly.
And then there you go.
So it's a perfect timing sort of thing.
There you go. There you go. So again, you know, I wouldn't say necessarily force yourself, but I would say sometimes if you're just not feeling it, maybe step beyond that and say, you know, I'm going to do this because I know once I do it, I'm going to feel better and I'm going to want it. But if you're truly feeling like you absolutely have to force yourself, don't. But do have a conversation with your partner and say, you know, I'm not feeling as sexual right now. I still want to be intimate with you. I still want to be close to you, but maybe I'm just not, maybe my hormones are out of whack or something. And have a conversation. I think a conversation is always helpful.
Right. And obviously there's, well, if, you know, we're talking about, you know, you've been in this relationship for a long time, so you probably already know what each other's, desire for amount of sex. So if let's say the guy likes to have sex every single day and you're a once a week tops person, but now you're not even feeling like doing it once a week, you've dropped down to once a month. Forcing yourself to do it every single day to meet his, you know, need I don't think is necessarily required, but you do, I think, should try to work towards getting back to that once a week, which seemed to have worked for the beginning part of your relationship. But, you know, so we're not saying that, you know, you suddenly have to become a sex slave or anything, but returning back to that level where you're both can feel that intimacy and closeness and not just keep drifting apart is important.
Right, because sex really is really, especially for men, a huge component in intimacy because they sometimes need that sexual contact to feel intimate with someone. And so that's something to keep in mind. So Great article. Of course, we'll post it up on our Facebook page so you guys can go out and take a look at it. And with that, I think we're going to have to take a quick little break. When we come back, we're going to talk about not peeing in your pool. And we're not talking about the actual peeing. We're talking about peeing in your dating pool. So don't go away. You are listening to
Mod Love.
So upset, he cried to her with whiskey on his breath.
This is Stephen Cardinal of Mod Love, and if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to head out to iTunes and leave us a review. Doing so will really help us reach more people and touch more lives. And if you're not an iTunes user, even a review on our Facebook page will go a long way in showing your support. Thanks a lot, and thanks for listening to Mod Love.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Jody Riley with my co-host,
Stephen Cardinal.
And you are listening to
Mod Love.
You might be downloading us from modloveradio.com, or you might be listening to us on Kinetic Hi-Fi or Bandit Radio FM. However you got here, we are excited that you did. We are in our final segment for this show, and we're going to be talking about something that Steve did a Straight Talk segment on
Back in 2013, yes.
Yeah, a long time ago. Gosh, that's been two years ago.
Back a year and a half, back before we were ever in podcast form. So.
Yes, but this is interesting, and you can also get this on the Soulmate Dance site, and it's also
I should be on StraightTalkWithSteve.net as well.
So basically this came about, and I wanted to talk a bit about it tonight because, of course, with all of the stuff that's been going on with the Confederate flag and gay marriage and blah, 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 people have been just kvetching on social media and stuff. And it reminded me of our conversations that we had had with people dating, because I've also seen this a lot lately, and I don't know what it is about summertime that people just start kvetching on Facebook and social media.
But must be the heat. They're feeling a little bit steamy. They got that little bit of sweat going down their butt crack, and it's just making them uncomfortable.
They're just irritable.
Yeah, they got the boob sweat going on underneath the boob there, and they're just irritable.
But people are just, they're going out on these dates that are somewhat bad or not to their liking or whatever. And instead of journaling or processing it with a friend or whatever, they take it to social media. And they just basically berate the person that they went out with. He didn't open the door. She didn't offer to pay. Blah, 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 blah. Sometimes they even post pictures, which, again,
They may not even be posting names. They'll just say, right. Oh, I just went on the worst date last night. This guy did this and this guy did that. Or this woman did this, this woman did that, blah, 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 kvetch, kvetch, kvetch. And, of course, you know, you're going to have those friends who will come out and, you know, click like, and, oh, yeah, you deserve so much better. Oh, my God. And they'll just commiserate with you and whatnot. But then you have a bunch of other people who may have been thinking that, oh, she's single or he's single. Maybe I'd like to date her. Then you start reading, no, here's what happens to someone who has a bad date. They get lambasted across the internet and just trash talked. I don't really want to have anything to do with that person.
Yes.
So you're peeing in your own pool by basically standing out in the corner and railing against all these people. You know, yeah, your closest friends or, you know, Facebook friends, which may not be friends at all, are certainly going to, you know, pat you on the back. Of course, they may get offline later and talk to their loved ones and say, oh man, she was going at it again. She was just bitching and moaning about life again. But you fed into it because that's what you do, right? You love to whip people up on Facebook.
Well, and sometimes we truly think we're being supportive when we do that. And really, that's not. You know, I think sometimes, you know, whether – and you don't – you certainly don't want to do it publicly. But sometimes private messaging someone and saying, hey, you know, this might be killing your chances of dating other people because they're reading how you're now, like you said, lambasting this person – that you had a so-so date with, but you're talking about how his teeth weren't white enough or she didn't wear her clothes weren't stylish enough or whatever somebody's complaining about. And a lot of times the complaints are so trivial you know, he didn't open my door, or, you know, she didn't offer to pay part of the bill, or she didn't text me when she got home to tell me she got home okay. It's like, really?
Yep. She works at a homeless shelter 30 hours a week in addition to, you know, taking care of her mother who's in a home and all these other wonderful things in the community, but she didn't offer to pay for the meals, so she is no good. She is trash. Right? I mean, is that really what you're judging people on, are those little things like that rather than the bigger picture? And again, is, you know, Facebook or Twitter or what have you really the place to start dumping all that stuff out?
And it's not the place to process it. Again, if you've really had a terrible date and you're really, you know, this whole thing about all men suck. Well, let me tell you something. Or all women suck or whatever. All women are gold diggers. If you're putting that out there, if there was anybody on your newsfeed that might possibly ever want to date you, you have just been completely marked off the list. Because number one, they don't want to be called out on social media if somebody happens to see you out with them. And they're thinking, well, this person's really kind of negative, and I don't really want to try to be in a relationship or try to date somebody who thinks every one of my species is a jerk or a gold digger or whatever. I mean, they're not going to be lining up around the block. And you have to understand that you're shooting your own self in the foot. You're peeing in your own pool. If you got to swim in that pool, stop peeing in it, because it ain't doing you any good.
Yeah, I think that's the major lesson there, is that you're not doing yourself any good. You are, you know, putting yourself out there as a negative person who's going to just trash talk folks. And you know, at best, we're seeing these things where no name is mentioned. But depending on where you live, you know, here in Charleston, certainly we're a small city.
But I have seen pictures posted. And that's, like, I mean, just, oh my God.
Right. But a lot of times, even though the person does not say who it was, enough people do know who you went out with or can put two to two together that they realize that, all right, so if I date you, some people are going to know that it's me that you're trash talking the next day because I neglected to
open your car door.
Or yes, I texted you to say, hey, I can't find your apartment. Where are you at? Rather than called you and you somehow were offended by receiving a text. Whatever it is, it's, you're just going to drive those people who would actually be normally nice and considerate away. And the who are going to be the ones that are left are still going to see that and say, I'll do it anyway.
Oh, the God. Creeps. Yeah, yeah. They're going to be the jerks. They're going to be the ones that are going to try to, you know, work you over or prove you wrong. And they're going to do all these different things a lot of times that is just going to wind up bringing out your ire anyway. They're going to be the people that are trying to prove you wrong. So, yeah, just don't do it. And here's what to do instead. Call a girlfriend. Call a guy friend. Call somebody.
Call your mom.
Call your mom. Call a trusted friend and blow up to them. If you don't have a trusted friend, you might want to look into that. If you don't have a trusted friend that you can call, journal it, you know. Record it on your iPhone. Write it in an email that you don't send. Whatever. Write, you know, but don't put it out for the whole world to see, because what you're doing is you're really keeping yourself from being able to meet other people that might be really good dates for you, but they now think that you're an overly emotional cad for calling somebody out on Facebook for trivial stuff. So just whatever, just don't do it. Don't take it to social media. And that's all I got to say about that.
I'll just say, and we're not talking about the person who tried to rape you.
No,
right, or something like that, because you do have a, you know, calling somebody out to protect your friends, you know, there might be a valid reason for doing that. We're not talking about that. We're talking about that he didn't hold the door, she didn't offer to pay the bill, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the trivial stuff. Or, you know, I've been dating this person for 6 weeks and they suddenly decide that they don't want to see me anymore. That sort of stuff. What, you know, you have to, of course, look at it and figure out, you know, is this something that I need to take to social media? And if it is, or I think you should keep all of this stuff out off of social media.
Right.
It's my personal thing. But, you know, and then again, somebody who uses a lot of social media, I see the good and the bad points. But I think if you've had a bad date, don't put it on social media. Just, you know, take it where it needs to be taken. All right. Well, with that, I think we're kind of at the end of our show, aren't we?
I think this is pretty much it. So do we have an idea of what's coming up the rest of the month?
I do not have it in front of me.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, sorry. But I do know it's all going to be around sex and intimacy. I've reached out to a couple of people that were trying to coordinate schedules to get them on the show. So it should be fun, lively, steamy, sensual summer. I hate that word, sensual.
That's probably why we didn't use it earlier.
Yes, because I don't like that word. I don't know why I don't like that word, but I just don't like that word. But anyway, it's going to be sultry summer here on Mod Love. So if you want to learn a little bit more about sex and intimacy, make sure you catch all of our shows this particular summer.
Right. And if you are one of our U.S. listeners, then certainly have a fantastic Independence Day this coming weekend, because you'll be hearing this on the 2nd.
Yep.
Or downloading it on the 3rd. So Independence Day, 4th of July, is right around the corner for those of us here. And if you're overseas, I'm sure you have your own days of celebration coming up either soon or maybe we just missed it. I hope you enjoyed those as well. But here in the U.S., we are celebrating our Independence Day from England.
Yes, we are. So with that, we're going to have to get on out of here. But happy 4th of July. And thanks so much for listening. You've been listening to
Mod Love.